I think you're ready now to hear a little story about a girl. Girl named Megan. Girl named Megan that didn't have a very good time in high school. I'm referring to myself. When I say Megan, it's me, Megan. And I know you look at me now and think, boy, she must have breezed through high school. Not the case, Annie. Okay? They used to try to blow me up. They threw firecrackers at my head. Firecrackers. I mean, literally. I'm not saying that figuratively. I got firecrackers thrown at my head. They called me a freak. You know what I did? I pulled myself up. I studied really hard. I read every book in the library. And now, I work for the government. I have the highest possible security clearance. Don't repeat that.
I won't.
I can't protect you. I know where all the nukes are, and I know the codes.
I won't say anything.
You would be amazed. A lot of shopping malls. Don't repeat that.
TBTL!
Oh, snap! This comedian was crazy in the 80s with his raw and delirious routines. Jared.
Oh, he's hilarious, dog. Who is Rick Moranis?
Anytime you can do something that's fun, you like to do it, and make money doing it, hey. It's a win-win-win. And anytime you can win-win-win, you're win-win-winning, you know? If you're just winning or win-winning, that's just winning or win-winning. But when you're win-win-winning, you're win-win-winning.
Hell yeah.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Well, hello, good morning, and welcome to a Wednesday edition of TBTL, a show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It's an audiophile's nightmare.
My name is Luke Burbank.
I just want you to be normal, and clearly you're not.
I'm your host, coming to you once again from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It's a beautiful June morning here in Bellingham. Sun already high in the sky over Lake Whatcom, looking out on Squalicum Mountain. And we got a great show in store for you. It's episode 2916 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
We started, I don't know, now maybe 6-8 months ago, we started recording the show at an earlier time, and we started doing that after we did an experiment for, I think it was a week, where we got up at 5 in the morning, and we had read something that said, hey, you want to improve your life, start getting up wicked early. Well, now the New York Times, who may have been the, I can't remember if they were the people behind article number one, but now they've got an article out that says, actually, getting up wicked early may not be the solution to your problems. In fact, it might be creating more problems, like sleepiness during other times of the day.
We're just blowing through nap time, aren't we?
So we'll bring you some contradictory medical information, as we're wont to do on this show. Also, when Andrew and I were traveling back from Australia this weekend, I was playing this like trivia game on the Qantas flight, and a question came up that was so ridiculous and so funny to us. Just the question and the possible answers to this trivia question on a Qantas flight out of Australia, that we took a picture of the question. And now I spent a good part of this morning going down a deep rabbit hole on an Australian novelty singer named Joe Dolce.
It's a waste of time to do that.
And I will give you the results of my deep dive coming up on the show. Plus, emails, V-mails, and this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show. He's a handsome young stranger who's doing the work. He's back at it again with the white Vans. I'll tell you what, though, he's still having a little bit of trouble reintegrating into life in the United States.
I'm starting to feel like a corn dog at a hot dog party, and it ain't flattering, I'll tell you that.
Nonetheless, he is here. He is ready to help us out. He is Andrew Walsh, and he is joining us from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning,
Mike. Good morning, Luke. Good morning. I've been up for a while, surprisingly.
Really?
Yeah. Got up right before 6 a.m., which is a little bit on the early side for me. Usually I'm a 6:45 guy myself. But I told you before the show, I don't want to bog things down with more just sleep schedule talk, because I worry about its relevance and interest to the audience. But I will say, I thought I was over any kind of jet lag thing. I thought jet lag was just something for, I don't know, that you kind of complain about a lot, even though it's not that big of a deal. Like when I had my wisdom teeth out and for some reason it didn't hurt. Might have been the drugs. Anyway, I thought I was all like on a regular schedule. Then yesterday, I just sat down for a little nap. I was going to clean my ears a little bit. Do you ever do that?
Okay, wait a minute. As a pre-nap.
Yeah.
As a pre-nap ritual, you clean your ears?
What do you do?
Not that.
Really? No, I know that's a weird thing to say. When I was a kid, my mom used to have us clean our ears out with hydrogen peroxide every once in a while for like a deep clean. I don't know if other people do that or not, but you know, that stuff bubbles up. And so
can you explain to me the process? Do you like pour it into your ear or do you put it on a cotton swab? And even saying cotton swab or Q-tip.
Oh.
Makes the small hairs on my arm stick up. I don't know what that condition I have is called, but it. I don't even like saying those words. But do you? How do you apply the hydrogen peroxide to your inner ear?
You will be very happy and relieved to know that it does not involve those devilish little things at all. So you can get those out. You can get those. I'm not even going to say what they are, but you can get those out of your mind now and replace it with
goosebumps all over my body right now.
How do you feel about droppers, like little glass droppers, you know, like with a rubber?
What's a glass dropper?
You know, like a little, I'm sorry, like a little,
syringe?
Not a syringe. That would be a needle, you know, just like a little dropper.
I grew up also calling that thing a syringe. You're talking about like rubber. It's got a ball on one end and you squeeze it because it can have a liquid in it and it goes down a narrow tube.
Yeah. I'm looking to see what they're called. They're just called glass droppers, apparently. But yeah, you'll have them, glass, you know, like dropper. The thing that might screw under the top of a tincture bottle or something like that.
Oh, that. I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking more of the kind you use with babies to clean out their noses and other things. And those are usually, you know what I'm talking about? It's rubber.
Yeah. That thing's a little bit more hardcore. That thing like flushes stuff out. This is like if you need to put just like if you need something that you can just drop one or two drops into something, you just like put it in the liquid, you squeeze the water up, and then you drop it. So that's how I get. So you here, I'm just going to walk you through this. Is it time for
Please
a break
do.
Yet?
Can you actually reenact it live on the air? Like or what? Enact it. Could you actually just do it?
Like, ooh, maybe. I'm not set up for that right now, but we could certainly do that at some point. That would be interesting. That's next year's TBTL-a-thon. I just lay down for a half hour and clean out my ears and ask people to support the show. So I haven't done this in a long time. I'll get into the details of how it works. But essentially, it gives your ears what I think to be a good deep cleaning. And I think my mom used to do it maybe when we got water in our ear, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But it seems like it was a part of my life a lot back in the day. And now I don't do it as often. But on this last trip we were on, I don't know if I wasn't cleaning my ears as much. I don't know what happened. But yesterday I was kind of like, you know what? I could use a little ear cleaning. It's a nice sensation. And of course, I'll have to lay down to do it. So what I do is I go upstairs. And obviously, I know I'm going to end up taking a little nap here. There's no way I'm getting through this without falling asleep. I go upstairs. I take my hydrogen peroxide. I take my little glass dropper. I take a whole bunch of Kleenex. You're okay with Kleenex, right? Can I talk about them?
Yeah,
they're
Kleenex
not made
is
of
fine.
They're not made of cotton.
Yeah. They have that weird quality when you rub them together.
Yeah, no, they should be fine. So anyway, I go upstairs. I lay down. Let's say I lay down on my left side first. I get a dropper full of that peroxide. I'm wondering right now if listeners are like, no, that's terrible. Or maybe they're saying, yes, that's wonderful. I don't know. Get at me. But I put a full dropper in my right ear while I lay on my left side. I just let that bubble up like that song Lucas with the Lid Off, which, by the way, I heard blasting out of a bar in Darwin, which made me love Darwin. Ah. Apparently, what was his name? I guess he was just went by Lucas, right? Lucas with the Lid Off, still a going concern in Australia.
It's funny because people have definitely referenced that in relation to my name. I don't know if I've ever even actually heard the song.
Oh, you have, because I played it for you before. Let's bump in with it. I love that song so much. I think it's one of the most underrated songs.
Whatever bubbles, maybe, bubbles up. I feel... Run, come follow me.
Yeah.
Run, come follow me now. That's what's happening in your
run,
ear.
Come follow me. Yeah, but so I'm in this just bubbling up. And what you do is you just let it sit in there until the bubbling slows down. It's like popping popcorn in a microwave. And you just wait until the...
Wow.
Well, I don't eat it, though. Is that what you...
No, I'm just imagining now you're like popping popcorn in your inner ear canal. Oh. It just seems painful.
Yeah, no, that's rough.
I do think this is a better approach than like the thing that doctors will tell you and other medical professionals is you don't want to be sticking any objects in there, but some liquid, something like hydrogen peroxide, that actually seems like a pretty safe approach. I'm sure a listener will now email me why this is one of the top 10 most dangerous things you can do. But
Reader's Digest.
It seems like, I mean, how much harm? Actually, that's decent content for us. If the but that actually sounds like a pretty safe approach because it's just liquid. It's just going to come out at some point. And, yeah, maybe do a little – the liquid bubbles will do some scouring.
Yeah, just be careful that you don't grab the wrong bottle. I realize I keep my peroxide right next to my rubbing alcohol. And as I was grabbing the peroxide yesterday, I just had this weird thought like, oh, my God, what if you grabbed the wrong one? I don't think putting rubbing alcohol in your ear would be good at all.
Sorry. Carrie, move the battery acid over.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we keep. We keep our little – just a little – vial of battery acid next to the vial of hydrogen peroxide. And you're right. You just actually saved us from a real situation. I appreciate that.
Also, you know what? Move your little vial of LSD acid away from there too, because I don't think you want to put a bunch of that kind of acid in your ear either.
I've mixed those up before with devastating results.
That's a hell of a time right there. They call it ear tripping. I don't know if in CSI they call that ear tripping. It's a whole new craze.
Yeah, thanks, Ice-T.
Oh man, where are we going with this? So anyway, I don't know. So you're not familiar with that, but yeah. So I just went for, and you know why that would appeal to me, right? Even if it's not doing much good in there, it just really feels like it is, and this whole process, and you feel like you're deep cleaning your ears, and the bubbles slow down, and you're like, "Good job, bubbles! I know you got some good stuff out of there." And then you turn over, and then you
I like
drain
that your love
that
of
ear.
Cleaning extends into your actual physical body,
into my body, absolutely,
yeah.
Are
those bubbles coming from your body?
I'm the president of Lucas with the Lid Off. I need to talk to you right away. Yeah. So then you but just flip yourself just... over, and then you just let that ear drain for like another 15 minutes while you apply it, you know, the peroxide to the other ear. And I will tell you what, I fell asleep while the final ear was draining. This is the point of my story, not that it's a good one. And I thought, okay, I'll just nap for like an hour or something. I can still blame it on the jet lag. I slept for 4 goddamn hours in the middle of the
That's
afternoon.
That's a long nap for you.
That is half a night's sleep.
I've been known to do that plenty of times in my life, but that's I come from a long line of power nappers. I know that that's like, again, yeah, north of 4 hours, you go over 4 hours, you've just gone back to sleep. Like there's a point at which we're no longer we can't refer to this as a nap any longer. This is a sleep.
And this is where I'm in trouble now. So after that nap, then I got up and I prepared for the podcast I recorded with Genevieve last night. We got done with that pretty late. I didn't go to bed until after 1 a.m. again last night. Maybe actually I think it was closer to 2. And so because I wasn't tired because of the nap. And maybe my body still is sort of on Australia time. I don't know. But now I'm all concerned because I got about 4 hours of sleep last night. Woke up at 6 a.m. kind of bushy-tailed, ready to go. I can't think of what the actual expression is. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed.
Yeah. And I felt
ears
good.
Freshly
Yeah, that was
out.
Probably it, right? I'm just like, I got fresh ears. Let's get going. Ziggle-zag it. Let's get back at this podcasting thing. And now I feel good, but I know that I'm going to hit a wall again, probably not that long from now. And can I just continue this trend of sleeping 4 hours during the day and 4 hours at night? I don't like that. So do I power through today?
Why don't you like that?
I don't know. I don't like it. I like getting 8 hours at night and then staying awake for the daytime.
But let me ask you this. Do you get 8 hours at night?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think with when I'm on a good schedule. So let me. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to do sleep math on the air. That'll really be bad. But if we're doing the show at 8 and I'm waking up around 6:30, I think back timing it, I'm going to bed at generally appropriate hours to get 8 hours of sleep usually.
Okay. Because I can't ever quite tell with you because you have a thing and I hope you take this in the spirit it's intended. I don't mean this to be insulting or suspicious of the veracity of your claims. But, you know, as we've established, you'll often say to me, like, I ate way too much, or I heard I had too many beers, or I feel like you are often describing what you did as too much, and I can't quite figure out if it actually was too much. Like, I stayed up way too late. But I don't know now if you really stayed up too late, like, and if too late is 2 a.m., or if you're just feeling like you did. So, because I actually really am not clear on when – on a typical week, like you're going to sleep, you know, on a typical night. It sounds like you're doing it around 10, 10:30, which would be great.
Yeah.
Somebody's like, I stayed up way too late last night.
Yeah, maybe 11-ish. I think once I get north of 11, that's where it starts to be like, oh, I'm staying up kind of late considering that I'm going to wake up, you know, around 6:30.
Overall, have you been happy with, I'm sure that you've been happy with the change in our recording schedule because it's just – it's more reliable for you. And you're somebody who's much better at keeping commitments and being on time for things. I'm kind of a wreck with that. So I bet you like that part of it. But I get the sense you don't love us starting the show at 8 a.m. Would you say the good outweighs the bad for you with this?
Yeah, I like the regularity of it. And I also do think, just professionally speaking, I think that it makes our listeners happier if we get the show out earlier. If I'm posting a show by 11 a.m. Pacific time, which is like what, like 2 p.m. East Coast time, I think that gives listeners a chance to listen during the day if they want to. But of course, they don't have to listen early. So I think it serves more people that way. Ideally, though, like this coming Friday, you said you can't start recording until 10 a.m., 2 hours later than usual because of your travel schedule. And to me, like, I am looking forward to that like a goddamn national holiday. Like, that sounds so great to me. So I don't love recording at 8 a.m. 9 a.m. would probably be better. 10 a.m. would be would feel really good to me. But overall, I would say
would 11 a.m. be better?
No, I actually think that...
What's it going to take to get you into a 2 p.m.?
Well, you know, well, we used to do that, and, you know, that was fine. But, like, honestly, if we're, like, talking about, like, sticking to a regular schedule but and having a little bit of discipline and not just having this kind of sliding afternoon recording schedule, then I think if I were to choose it, I would choose 10 a.m. That would be a sweet spot for me. But, like you said, does the good outweigh the bad? Sometimes I'm going to bed thinking, oh, I wish I didn't have to get up that early. But... you know, this is a that's not like a complaint. I don't go around like, oh, man, got to hit the hay because I got to wake up early and just hit the podcasting mines tomorrow. Like, we were in Cooper Petey. I saw what real people do for
actual
work.
Mines.
Yeah. So, you know, if the worst part of my job is that I have to wake up at 6:30, I think I can handle that.
Well, because I feel a little bad because, you know, I obviously went through a pretty big life change a while ago, stopped drinking and kind of like started just – you know, so for me, it's getting up at 6 in the morning. While it might not feel great all the time, it's not a big thing for me anymore. And I went, you know, it's all this kind of life improvement. And then it's like, oh, and by the way, Andrew, now you have to also get up earlier than we used to and do the show earlier. I mean, I guess we could do it at 10. My fear is that, and I would not say that the earliness of the show is linked to my sobriety, but I do fear that if we start doing it at 10 – then it'd be like, well, why not 11? And then it would just sort of slide potentially back into – I don't know. I feel like it's good for me, which, again, I feel bad if you're being forced to do something because of what I want to do. But it's like I think it's good for me to have to get up at a certain time in the morning so that at night I go to bed earlier. It just kind of puts me on an overall better schedule. Like, for instance, I did take a crazy long nap on Monday because of the jet lag, but generally speaking, I don't nap anymore. Carrie might take issue with that statement because I'm sure there are days when I do. But
that's my wife.
But like I used to be, my schedule used to be for a lot of my life: drink mass quantities of alcohol at night, have probably not very restful sleep, kind of wake up later in the morning. Get up, try to drink enough coffee to feel normal again, do the minimum amount of work, and then just wait till I could go back to sleep for a nap. Feel really good at about 6 p.m. I would say that 6 p.m. was the best I felt out of the whole day because it was like I had my second sleep. Mm-hmm. Basically, what you're proposing with your 2 4-hour is what I was doing for years. After I had my second sleep, I would wake up and I'd be like, now let me tell you, before second sleep would start, I'd be like, I'm hungover, or I just don't feel great. I'm never like, I am going to take a nap, and then I'm going to get up, and then I'm going to eat a salad, and then I'm going to like do yoga, and then I'm never drinking again, and then I'm going to be healthy. And then I'd wake up at 6 o'clock and be like, God, I feel good. I feel like I could have a drink. Mm-hmm. I feel like I could eat some pizza. I feel like I could start this merry-go-round right back up again. So all of which is to say, thank you for doing the show at 8 a.m. with me, which I know is not where you were trying to take this conversation. But I appreciate you doing that, even though it is duly noted that you would probably rather do the show later. But see, the nice thing is now, think of how pumped you are for Friday just to do it at 10 a.m.
Like, yeah, right?
I've just given you a gift. I've given you the excitement of looking forward to Friday and our 10 a.m. start time.
Like when the Browns went like 18 games without winning, I said the next time they win, it's going to feel like the Super Bowl, and it did.
Yep.
That's how Friday feels. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I get to sleep in for 2 hours. Can I just say one thing? Because this is a thought. It's so rare that I have a thought that I've been carrying around for years and years, and I haven't shared it on the show. Like, I'm really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. But everything that you just said about the kind of cycle of addiction with alcohol, I remember reading that exact cycle in, wait for it, not
Bukowski,
not the big book, not even Bukowski or Hemingway, but in Stephen King's The Shining. I remember Jack Torrance in that. I remember reading The Shining finally in college, I think. I had some like tattered copy that my friend John, I think, let me borrow and then didn't want back because he saw how much time it spent on the back of my toilet, to be honest. I remember reading from Jack Torrance's perspective what it was like to be a boozer in that way, where you would kind of wake up and be like, and trust me, I've had these feelings before too. You wake up and you're like, you know what? Screw this. Like this, that was too much last night. I don't like the way this is going. No more. But then by the time you kind of like get normal, or you start to feel normal again, by the time it's drinking time, you're kind of like, you know what? All those thoughts I had about having a salad and not drinking anymore, I feel better. I'm a different person. Let's celebrate with a drink. I can't remember exactly how Stephen King put it through Torrance's eyes, but I just that passage really stood out to me because of the somewhat like hopelessness of it.
Well, for me, I think I've talked about this on the show before, and we are now. This is supposed to be a new TBTL, and we're already 6 minutes overdue for our break.
No.
But for me, there was an interesting cycle, which I think somebody should definitely investigate, which is the connection between exercise and potentially excessive drinking. I think there are a lot of people who are like me who exercise so that they can then mentally clear out the space or give themselves permission to drink more. And there's this kind of connection between the two things. People, I think of exercise, and of course, there are plenty of people who exercise, and it's just part of a totally healthy existence. But I think that there are a lot of people like me who, like, what would happen is if I exercised and, like, I, you know, felt like, okay, well, I just did what I was supposed to do. I'm feeling healthy. I'm feeling like, you know, the blood's been flowing, the sweat's been sweating, and now I'm all showered off. And I remember when I lived in L.A. My whole thing would be I was going to go to the Tattletale on a Friday, but I'd have all these rituals I would have to do first. And one of them would be run. So I'd go to work in Culver City. We had a shower there at NPR West. And then I'd get off. We started really early, so I'd be done with work at like, you know, noon or two or three or something. Go for a run and then take a shower. And then that moment of driving down to the Tattletale, but being like having freshly exercised, that somehow played into me feeling like it was okay. Whereas there, oddly enough, if there was a day where I didn't get a run in, I would be less inclined to drink on that day because I'd feel like I'm gross, I'm fat, I'm not exercising, and I don't – like this is just going to be pouring more bad things onto a bad situation. But catch me on a day when I've done a 10-mile run and I'm like feeling good, then it would be like, yeah, your life is totally in balance. Mm-hmm. And I tend to think there are more people that are like that than we really think about or know about. And I bet you someday if somebody does a longitudinal study of that, they'll find that there's a strong connection.
That's interesting. I bet you you're right. And I wonder if that hasn't been researched. And if it hasn't been researched,
you know what I know?
Why aren't you researching
it? I haven't researched if it's been researched.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah, no, that
we know. We know that much.
You know what? I'll tell you what. When we're finished up here, I'll pour myself a drink and I'll do some Googling. I'll let you know what I find out.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Let's take that break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the curious career of Joe Dolce. And also, well, I feel like we've sort of addressed the sleep stuff, but we will also. You know, I saw there's a meme going. I'm pre-regretting even bringing this up, Andrew. But there's this meme going around that I just kind of makes me hard eye roll every time I see it, even though lots of people we know have been engaging in it. And I think it's overall probably a force for good. It's on Twitter. We'll probably talk about it. I'll probably anger some of the listeners coming up after this break on TBTL.
Is it the Ice Bucket Challenge?
Yes.
Cast the vibe, the reggae and the ragtime. the vibes, cast the vibes. Oh, cause it's Lucas with the little. Cast the vibes, cast the vibes. Oh, cause it's Lucas with the little.
I'm going to be honest with you. If I've heard this song one time in my life, it's been on this show when you played it. But mm-hmm. It's not, for whatever weird reason, it just missed me when it was popular, I assume, what, in the 90s maybe?
Yeah, I was curious about the year too, so I just looked this up. It's a 1994 song by Danish rapper Lucas Sikan, who he just goes under Lucas, but I didn't know he was Danish.
It missed me, but I have heard it referenced many times because people, if they hear your name's Luke, they'll either go Star Wars, they'll go the movie Lucas,
oh, yeah.
Starring, I believe, a young Corey Haim and a Charlie Sheen, maybe? Or they'll go Lucas with the lid off.
Listen to this. According to Wikipedia, it was most successful in Australia, where it reached number mm-hmm. 15 and peaked within the top 40 in Canada, New Zealand, and the UK. So the fact that we started talking about this, because I heard this bumping out of a club, I don't know if it was a club, but a bar in Darwin, makes a lot of sense.
That is actually a perfect segue into this whole Joe Dolce conversation, Andrew. You and I, on the flight home...
I'm pre-laughing. You're pre-gretting. I'm pre-laughing at this story.
So the first leg of our flight was actually from Darwin, home of many a Lucas with the lid off appreciator. We were flying from Darwin to Melbourne, and we were both kind of – I think you might have been on your gin rummy, but I was on the little TV screen playing some kind of a trivia game on the plane. And I it was great because a lot of the questions, well, it would go between questions that were overly easy for me, because now imagine this is Qantas. So, and this is a domestic flight within Australia. So most of the people, presumably the people on the flight, are Australian. So the questions, if they were about something in America, they'd be so easy to me, because of course to an Australian, it would have been potentially a little bit more difficult. Meanwhile, if they were about an Australian issue, they were so hard for me. So it was either just like slam dunk, I know this one. Like he once, you know, sat next to Nancy Reagan and said, just say no to drugs. And of course that was Lucas with the lid off.
Mm-hmm, right.
So anyway, I was playing this little trivia game, and one of the questions came up that was clearly for Australian people, because it was something I'd never heard of, a person I'd never heard of. And the question was so funny that I made you interrupt your gin rummy game and look at it. And let me see here. Can I find some kind of special music for this? Oh, this is good. Okay, this will work.
No, perfect.
This just feels like the kind of music. Also, the screen presentation was not unlike Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. What was the title of Australian Italian American Joe Dolce's one hit song? Was it Wake Up and Smell the Coffee, Eat My Shorts, Shut Up Your Face, or Get Off My Land?
Yeah, what did you guess?
I think I guessed wrong. Whatever it was, I got it incorrect. I did a kind of a... I assumed Get Off My Land, even in the 80s. Or whenever the song came out, I assumed even then Get Off My Land would have been seen as pretty xenophobic. So I eliminated that one. Shut Up Your Face seemed like a hurtful ethnic stereotype, so I eliminated that one. Eat My Shorts was presumably the property of Matt Groening and whoever owns The Simpsons. So I eliminated that one. So I went with Wake Up and Smell the Coffee, which of course was wrong. Because, Andrew, as you know, the real answer was... Shut Up Your Face.
Which, by the way, the question, it's only clicking with me now. They refer to him, because I remember thinking the specificity of his origins was remarkable. That it was, what was it, Australian, Italian? Is that how they describe him?
Australian, Italian, American.
Australian, Italian, American. It's like, wow. And so I guess shut up your face. You're right. Like maybe that's playing on the stereotype of how Italians might talk in movies. Shut up your face. I'm trying to use the sidewalk here, as they famously say.
Yeah.
No?
Stop remembering that.
Stop remembering
that. Shut up your face.
Right.
So I, of course, this morning, Andrew, had to go find a shut up a you face. On YouTube, viewed 7.8 million times.
Wow.
It's a classic 80s comedy song. And of course, Andrew, as you know, Joe Dolce was born in Painesville, Ohio.
No, I didn't. Did you really tell me that at the time? No, we didn't know that at the
no,
time.
No, I'm joking, because there's no universe in which anyone except Joe Dolce would know that. This is Joe Dolce. This is a video from Australia of him singing his classic hit song, Shut Up A You Face. He's in a kind of a Greek, like an Italian style, almost like, I don't know, Italian ruins, but it's almost like a restaurant. He's on stage, he has a little mandolin, and he's singing to a crowd of people who are clapping along.
Follow stupid rules, boy, to make me sick, just to make a lousy buck, not to feel like a fool. That's right, mama used to tell me, oh, what's the matter you? Hey, got no respect. What do you think you do? Why you look so sad? It's not so bad. It's a nicer place. I shut up in your face. That's my mama. Big accordion solo.
This song was number one in Australia, Andrew.
Wow.
In 1980. It also was number one in the UK. It has been recorded in, it was number one in Germany, France, Fiji, Puerto Rico, Quebec, Austria, New Zealand, and Switzerland. It was also, versions of it were recorded in Russia, in the language Russian. It has been translated actually into 15 languages. It's also been recorded in Aboriginal dialect.
Oh my God.
This thing was a multi-million selling hit. In fact, it was, by some measure, one of the most successful singles ever released in Australia.
It's a not so bad. It's a nicer place. I shut up on your face. I shut up on my face.
Joe Dolce was born in Painesville, Ohio, the eldest of three children. His parents were Italian-Americans. He moved to Australia. First of all, he went to Ohio University in Athens, Ohio.
Nice,
and,
OU.
And formed a number of different bands.
Harvard and the Hawking, as my friend Polly likes to call it.
Then he moved to Australia. He moved to Melbourne in 1978. His first single he recorded. Now, this is going to sound bad, Andrew, considering the song we're hearing is called Shut Up A You Face. Mm-hmm. But let me read the full description, because it's actually not terrible. His first single he released there was called Boat People.
Hmm.
But it was a protest song about the poor treatment of Vietnamese refugees.
Okay.
Shut Up A You Face was recorded in West Melbourne. But the story started in Ohio when Dolce was in Ohio. He would sometimes visit his Italian grandparents and his extended family. And they would use the phrase, what's the matter you, and shut up, which Dolce adapted and used in the song. He first performed the song at a venue called Marijuana House on Brunswick Street. Paid $500 to record the album. He spent $1,000 on the music video clip, which is what we're hearing from right now. As I mentioned, it became this massive international hit in actually 1981.
And just and to really be clear, it sounds like released here, recorded and released here in the States, though. Did I follow that correctly?
No, you did not follow.
Where's Marijuana House?
That's in Australia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this all happened in Australia. In fact, it seemed to make – this is why you and I had never heard of it. This song seemed to make zero impression in the U.S. Like, big hit everywhere except the U.S. in 1981. but did not. Maybe Weird Al had already cornered the market on a certain kind of novelty sound, but it was didn't of all the places it charted, it does not list the U.S. As being one of them.
I'm just looking at the end of year Hot 100 singles of 1981 here in the United States. So these are the songs that beat out "Shut Up, You Face," Betty Davis.
Be quiet, you face. Stop talking with the you face. Why the face?
We got Betty Davis Eyes. Kim Ooh. Carnes, "Endless Love" yeah. by Diana Ross and Lionel Richie. That doesn't pop immediately into my yeah. head. I'm kind of do you know that?
You
song
would know it
yeah.
if I played it.
I'll bet
I won't
you,
sing
yeah.
it because the listeners don't need to hear me doing my version of. But it has that my love, my love, my endless love.
Oh, yeah,
that's me.
Yeah.
Talk singing because I'm too shy to sing it right now. Okay, what else?
I'm not going to list all 100. I'll just list like
really?
97. But okay, Lady.
This is why we start the show at 8 a.m.
Yeah,
we need
right.
to build in time.
Hall and Peppa, stop naming 1981 end of year Hot 100 songs. Kenny Rogers with Lady. And then, this surprises me. I always forget that John Lennon was actually releasing songs like Just Like Starting Over in 1981. That's number four. I always think of that, of course, as a 70s thing. I forget that he made it into the 80s, and that was a top song. And then Jesse's Girl by Rick
Do you like that song?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that album. That's Milk and Honey, maybe? Is that correct? I don't know.
Because he almost goes doo-wop beyond that. It's been so long since we took the time.
Oh, that's
it's
true.
Almost,
yeah,
but it's more
right.
maybe more
you're
Elvis
right.
than doo-wop.
Maybe
it's a
yeah.
little gets a little silly, mm. but I love that song so much.
Yeah, Double Fantasy that was on. Yeah.
So Joe Dolce followed up his big hit "Shut Up, You Face" with a cover of the song "If You Want to Be Happy." Which is that kind of, I think it's a, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, make an ugly woman your wife, which I found out was actually banned in certain countries because of that line about an ugly woman. And there were a lot of countries where they just faded the song at 2 minutes 40 seconds before it got into, I guess, whatever the hurtful part of the song was.
Really? I thought that was
so
in
that
the
song
chorus.
Was
I didn't know that you could like fade out of that song. I guess maybe it's one of those songs that kind of shifts halfway through or something.
Let me just click on this. The original single, lists a running time of 2 minutes, 14 seconds. Some later releases are slightly longer due to a longer fade out. The song was banned. Oh, you know what? I think I got that little twist.
Okay.
I don't think the fade out had to do with the issues with the lyrics. The song was banned on many radio stations due to the use of the words ugly girl or woman. Towards the end of the song, a brief dialogue takes place between the singer and the backup singers. Anyway, this though, they're talking about Jimmy Soul originally did that song, but our guy, Joe Dolce, did a cover of it that went to number 7 in Australia and also was popular in New Zealand. Then his subsequent singles, Andrew, included Pizza Pizza, Christmas in Australia, and he decided to really try to expand his oeuvre by releasing You Touch of My Car, I Break the You Face.
And that was a bit of a departure for him. He was really kind of stretching.
Yeah.
You know, he had gone, he had, like the Beatles,
I
he had gone
what,
talked to the Maharishi, and he came back, and then he was inspired, and he came up with that.
It was kind of his My Sweet Lord. He said,
right, yeah.
I want to talk about other things involving a stereotypical Italian accent and the word face.
Yeah, right.
From the man who brought you Shut Up, You Face. It's You Touch of My Car, I Break a You Face. I think it's so interesting the you can see the career arc, which, by the way, all indications are this guy has actually had a pretty fruitful career in Australia. He also writes poetry, and I'm sure he's doing great. He might even hear this. I don't know. I feel like if he has a Google alert set up, this is going to be the first thing that comes up today. But you can kind of see what I think is an arc of somebody who releases this song. It becomes huge. I'm talking, of course, about Shut Up, You Face, or Shut Up, You Face. Who are you facing? And then he does some other things, but then you can see he releases like 1, 2, 3 other songs, and then you kind of feel like maybe the roller coaster was starting to slow down, and either a producer or Joe or somebody was like, we have to reconnect with that Italian stereotype magic. Like, this is about the time, let's say it's probably 2-3 years later. I was watching Joe Dolce on Top of the Pops in Britain, which is hilarious because he's playing Shut Up A You Face. Let me see if I can find it. And people are trying to dance to it on Top of the Pops. It's not a particularly danceable song. Let me just this is 1981, Top of the Pops in Britain. The presenter can't even get through the intro. He's laughing so hard, I guess, at just how cheeky and fun this song is. Let's see here. Okay, take it.
Okay, now then, the Godfather's arrived all the way from Australia. This guy has been Top of the Pops in Australia for the last 8 weeks. He's got a song that if you're Italian, you may know about, and if you've ever watched The Godfather, get a load of Joe Dolce over here.
Wow. Get a load of Joe Dolce over here. Wow.
Here we go. Shut up, David. Uno, due, tre, quattro. When I was a boy, just about the eighth grade, Mama used to say, don't stay out late with the better boys. Always shoot the pool, Giuseppe going to flunk a school.
You can really hear the Paintsville, Ohio, in the accent.
Yeah. Boy, to make me sick, all the thing I gotta do.
I'm telling you, people are trying to dance to this right now in this video, and it's really something. It's very slow. But you can kind of see that, like, he was an international sensation outside the U.S., and then at some point, it was like, oh, man, I gotta get that energy back. And that was, I assume, when You Touch My Car, I Break A You Face came out.
I'm especially interested in his poetry. He said he's a poet now. I'm looking it up. One of his famous poems is called I Ate A Your Plums.
Nice William Carlos Williams reference. I'm proud of that.
It's the only poem I can think of right now. I don't know. I'm sure
I left those in the ice box. That's a spicy cold plum.
And other poems. That's the name of the book.
The collected works of Joe Dolce.
That's a spicy plum. And other collected works. Wow, I enjoyed that journey. I have a feeling I enjoyed it as much as you did when you first went down it.
I will tell you this, though. We're sort of joking and having some fun. That song will be in your head for the next week.
Oh, no. I
can't get it out of my head. I've put that evil inside all the listeners at this point because, you know.
Try Peroxide.
It's a pretty catchy song.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah, everybody just get that out.
You know what? Or try that battery acid. I don't know.
Yeah. Either one. Or the LSD.
That's why you keep it in
whichever
there.
You got.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, this is the story that I was pre-gretting. Mm. And I actually, I'm not sure if you've seen this or not. And I'm not sure if I'll be able to find it on the fly. I had it set aside on Twitter. I bet you if I just scroll through Twitter for a minute, I'll find it. It's this meme. It's got a gif of one of the Desus and Mero guys.
Mm-hmm.
Or
Desus.
Kind of doing like Desus. How do you say his name?
I think it's Desus. I might be wrong.
Tell me about a time someone doubted you meme. Okay. He's doing kind of the he's doing the like the Hulk Hogan. It's a gif of him doing the kind of Hulk Hogan, like, spin your hand around and put it up to your ear.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like Hulk Hogan used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, let's see. Oh, man. Now I can't find this thing.
I
which
found
is
it
for the better.
Here.
You,
I think
have
I have
you located it.
Located it? Yeah, I just Googled it, and it's somebody named Frederick Joseph seems to have posted the original of this, and it's Desus and Mero. Yeah, it's like a gif of him doing the Hulk Hogan thing, and it just says, name a time you proved someone wrong who doubted you. Be as petty as you like. This is the first time seeing of this, though. I'm assuming this is the original. It seems to be the tweet.
Yeah, and you know, it started popping up in my feed, I don't know, like a couple days ago, I think. And I took note of it just because I'm a fan of anyone who's reenacting anything Hulk Hogan did.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So the gif caught my attention. Uh-huh. And also because a lot of the people that I follow and people that are in my kind of Twitter orbit were posting things. Some of them funny and petty, and some of them more just kind of like, this is my fight song. But I actually don't want to find specific examples because I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like it's become, in my Twitter feed, this chance for a lot of people to just like humble brag / outwardly brag / it I don't know. It just seems like it's taken off in my kind of Twitter circle as a way of for people to just, I don't know, sort of self-aggrandize in a weird way that's seen as empowerment, but it just feels like – the problem with this as a topic is there's so many problems with it. One, the only outcome is I'm going to hurt someone's feelings or people are going to be annoyed at me. So why would I even start this? This hence the pre-grit. But it's just also if I get specific – with any of the examples, it's going to be clear various people I'm talking about. I will just say I'm torn because I feel like everyone should be able to sing their song and be proud of themselves and talk about a time when people doubted them. And yet it also just feels like this weird thing that's being embraced because everybody wants to just get on here and talk about a time they did something that nobody expected them to do. And it just – I don't know why. It's something that I think is probably overall fine for the universe, but it's given me kind of a weird feeling.
If you don't mind, and I will distance you from this as much as possible, because I would like to give some examples because I think some of the early responses are people that are not in our world at all. These are some of the people who like kind of jumped on and answered this question honestly right away. And I think it gives a good feeling for what this person was kind of going for here. So the first response, I think, is, while I was in nursing school, my boss at the hospital where I worked told me she didn't know why I was going to nursing school. I would never make it. When I finished nursing school, I applied for nursing supervisor. I got the job and became her boss. She quit soon after. So I think, and then there's a bunch of other stuff like that. Teachers who said you were wrong about something and embarrassed somebody in front of the class, but then the person came back with the evidence that they were right the next day. Stuff like that. So I understand why... As this, like those two examples don't annoy me. Those are kind of interesting stories and it's kind of an interesting exercise. But I can totally see how this would eventually, as it kind of continues to get retweeted and things start to unravel a little bit. And then as people within our smaller orbit that you see posting things, I could definitely see how this would get into some territory that is, as I like to say, not for me. Although, yeah, I think there's an empowerment thing there that, like, I don't need to feel empowered because, you know, I was one of those guys who was born white, straight, male, middle class to upper middle class, born on third. So I'm kind of like, ugh, this isn't for me, and I understand how it'd be irritating. But like you, I will try to hold my fire back a little bit because people have had struggles that they've overcome, and if they feel empowered by sharing that, then I don't want to be the person to try to take that away, I guess.
I think part of it too, which let me just add another layer of why this is a bad topic for us. I mean, this started out sort of on Black Twitter, and you know, there are people that are chiming in who are people of color and people who are, you know, have just had to really overcome a lot, and that part kind of makes sense to me. But then, yeah, I think by the time I saw it, it was in white Twitter, and it was people talking about things that just were like swim and writing. My husband waited 10 years to tell me. His dad thought I was only marrying him for his family's money. By the way, my husband drove a 79 Bronco in 2003. 15 years and 4 kids later, I'm still here. The only money they gave us was gifts. Well, this seems like a healthy in-law relationship. This is a really good place to hash that. It's become this repository for people to just put – people to just unload all manner of things unrelated to, I think, what the original intent was. And again – It just kept popping up in my feed, and every time it popped up in my feed, whatever the person was writing, I was like, really? You thought – listen, that's rich coming from me. Oh, that's rich. Opa. Because I put a lot of things on Twitter that the world doesn't need.
Was that another song by our guy?
I'm probably not
– That's a rich.
That was his seventh hit. Opa.
Sorry to cut you
off. I think part of the problem for me with this is that it's like when I say things that are like go Luke or self-aggrandizing, or when I put on stuff on Twitter that the world doesn't really need, I just feel like doing it. It seems fine to me, and when other people do it, it annoys me. And that's the real tension here, is that when someone else is doing something that doesn't quite tonally work for me, I'm like, really? Why would you do that? But when I do it, I'm like, everybody should just be fine and live and let live.
What this all says for me is I got to somehow update my Twitter bio so that it reflects that I engage in white Twitter. How do you think that'll go off?
Foremost spokesperson.
Right, I never heard the term white Twitter before. I don't know if anybody had.
I don't know if it's a term.
I'm certainly intrigued by it.
Well, I mean, I say that because I just assume as a white person, right. most of the spaces that I move through, be it digitally or in the real world, are primarily white, which is not a great thing and something that I'm working on. But I just, even when I think something is not a white space, it probably is a white space. And I know that's the case because when I'm in a non-white space, it's noticeable to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And by the way, and you know that I'm not making – I know exactly what you're talking about. I just think – I think I'm a little bit loopy probably from my lack of sleep. It's just – I know exactly what you're saying. I'm not trying to undermine that at all. I didn't take any offense to that. I just think it's so fun.
But you're right. I mean, I just kind of did decide to just unilaterally declare the Twitter I'm in white Twitter, which is – probably accurate. Again, you know. Unfortunately accurate, I think. I don't know. I think maybe we should just slowly back away from the topic because I'm sure that there's lots of great people out there, even who might be listening, who utilize this meme and are like, kind of like, really? Why'd you steal my sunshine here on a Wednesday morning?
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
Oh, hey, by the way, just like two-minute version of the sleep story, because we started doing our own kind of like version of talking about sleep patterns. The New York Times has this article out today, which I'll just sort of summarize from memory. They're basically saying that, I mean, the main takeaway is getting as much sleep as you can, getting 8 hours of sleep, if it's possible for you, a night is extremely important for our health. There are all kinds of deleterious effects from not getting enough sleep. So if getting up at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m, if you're doing that to try to improve your life, but it's costing you sleep, like you're not able to go to bed at 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. rather, or 9 p.m. or what, or something like that. If you're trying to do this thing where you're being a go-getter, and you know, famously Thomas Edison, one of the things they mentioned is that Thomas Edison said 4 hours of sleep was all anyone needed. But what they didn't mention was Thomas Edison was a major napper. Like he was pulling an Andrew. He could go down for 4 hours. Actually, the word on Thomas Edison was that he would just take these like mini naps all the time, which could have been narcolepsy. Who knows?
Oh, wow.
But the idea was like if you've been told that like to be great, like Steve Harvey apparently once said, Steve Harvey only sleeps 4 hours a night, which is, I don't know why that's weird to me to think about, but it is. Steve Harvey once apparently said that like rich people don't get 8 hours of sleep a night. I think his point was in order to be wealthy and quote unquote successful, you have to be on your grind and that doesn't allow time for sleep. But the New York Times was saying if this attempt to be one of these kind of type A achiever, successful mogul types, if it's at the expense of your sleep, it's a bad decision. And there was one thing that I thought was interesting. They said that if you wake up early in the morning, even if you've gotten a lot of sleep, like even if you've gone to bed early, waking up too early for your body, like say at 4 a.m., your body is releasing all kinds of various things while you're asleep, like, you know, hormones and chemicals and things for certain stuff to be happening. And if you wake yourself up too early, it's like you still have a bunch of whatever the sleep hormones and chemicals are flowing through your body, and it makes you foggy. And I thought, Andrew, maybe that's what you're battling. Now, I don't even think you sound foggy in the morning, but you're always telling me that you're foggy in the morning. And maybe it's that if you're getting up too early for your body's natural sleep cycle, your body is still doing all the sleep stuff when you get up, and it's continuing to do it up to and into the 2/3 of the way through the show.
And so the argument there would be going to bed earlier, not waking up later.
No, the argument there would be, if possible, not setting an alarm.
I see.
Which is, I just don't, most of us just can't live in that world. Like,
yeah.
I mean, really what it would be to let your body wake itself up when it wants to wake up. And that would, and that would be when all of the, you know, chemicals had, and hormones had kind of been dispersed through your body and then had receded back to wherever they're supposed to go to, and then you were ready to sleep. Like, the natural thing would be to go to sleep when you're tired, stay asleep as long as your body wants to, and then get up without an alarm. That's the, like, platonic ideal. But, I mean, very few people can live in that world.
You know, I'm really interested in this idea of good alarm systems now, because I brought this up on the show a couple of weeks ago that my phone, I have this new phone, and all the alarms on here start off like really slowly and quietly, and then they kind of gently try to, you know, wake you up. And you were saying how you love that new function in these phone alarms.
That's my jam.
For me, it's not abrupt enough. It's not scary enough of a sound. I think I need a bit of a start. And I mentioned to you that I went to bed super late last night thinking, oh my God, how am I going to wake up? Again, I think it was like 2 a.m. and planning on waking up at 6:30. That's not a lot of time. And so I was worried about that. I'm thinking, oh my God, I'll bet you I'm going to hit snooze a bunch and I'm going to wake up at like 7:30 and rush down to the studio to do the show. And that's definitely when I'm not at my best. But I woke up at 6 o'clock straight up today because there was some, I'm just remembering this now, there was some ruckus outside. It sounded like maybe like at a construction site, maybe a few blocks away, something really big and heavy hit the ground, it sounded like. I'm sure everything's fine, but I think that's what woke me up, and it was kind of a foreign sound that was maybe somewhat disturbing, and so it woke me up at 6, and I was, like, awake. Not like, oh, what was that? I want to go back to sleep. Like, it woke me up, and then I got out of bed right away and thought I should take advantage of this and not try to go back to sleep because that's when I can get into trouble. And I'm just wondering, like, are there a bunch of things that I could, like, program into my life that are like natural alarms somehow? Like, did I mention the other day on the show, like, what if we used smell as an alarm? What if we used different senses?
Yes.
Because I don't think just like my phone alarm works for me anymore. I need
what you
bigger.
Need. You need your body to go into fight or flight. You need an adrenaline dump.
Yeah.
That's like, huh, what was that?
Yeah.
Like, you need to hear glass breaking. In fact, your alarm clock needs to be the sound of someone breaking into your house.
I need the sound of like somebody who's in a position, like we need Mike Resler to record something
being
that
disappointed
just said,
in you.
Yeah, not even, I was going to say like you're fired, but no, just like slightly disappointed. I just need a recording of our boss. I'll send him some scripts later on today and ask him to record these things. Just like, you know what, Andrew? Things are generally okay. I just expected you to fill out your timesheet a little bit earlier. Could we get on that?
This is better. This is better. Mm-hmm. This is the ultimate. This would get you out of bed at any time of the day or night.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, the show's sounding great considering the amount of time you guys put into it.
Wow. That's
right. Layers.
Wow. That's, at first I was kind of like, yeah, we do put a lot of time into this. I was like, wait, no, that's the opposite of what you're saying. Wow. Yeah, that's. Now I'll never. Well, you just kept me from taking
That'll
a nap.
Haunt you. Should we start doing the show at 5 a.m.?
Why not? I'm never going to sleep again.
Despite you sitting up in bed rocking.
Hey,
I mean, that's honestly, for us, direct criticism is probably, we can handle direct criticism more than a compliment that feels like it could have been more complimentary.
right. Yeah. Also, I was going to see if I can make this work for us right now. Maybe I still can, although this is going to be a little bit awkward as I set this up. But you know how I said my alarm clock isn't, you know, kind of disruptive enough, if that's the right term, for me. One thing I can do is I can add one layer to the sound where the robot voice will tell me what time it is. It's called...
Sounds upsetting.
Yeah, no, it's really upsetting, actually. Let's see. If I set this alarm for... Right now, it's 9:20. If I set this alarm for 9:21 and I hit save, will it give me the option of
Now I can't figure it out. But some of these things I have, a lady will come on, the lady robot voice, and she'll just say, mm-hmm. The time is 7:21 or something along the lines of that. And it is not a pleasant sound. So I can't seem to make it work right now. But anyway, that's another thing I'm working on.
And I don't know why this reminded me of. I don't know why. I guess I do know why it reminds me of it, and I'll explain. So you know how you and I were both geeking out a little bit on that Studio 360 two-part series on 2001 Space Odyssey?
Yeah. I need to listen to that.
I listened to it yesterday.
You did. You listened to both parts.
I was working around this. Oh, so good. So, so good. Cannot recommend that highly enough. Studio 360, they do these, like, is it kind of like, is it called American Masters or something?
It's called American Icons. Series, American Icons.
American Icons.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And they did one on the Kubrick film, and which, by the way, I don't even know if I've ever watched it all the way through. It makes me really want to watch the film. But it's just an incredibly well-produced 2 hours of radio. But one of the things they're talking about is how there's so many things about that film that were so prescient, and they figured out that, like, basically the – it was much scarier to – or much more unsettling to have a computer voice, to have Hal talking in a kind of restrained way than to have a bad guy in the movie. Because they, when they made the film, they didn't really know what the exact arc of the movie was going to be, Stanley Kubrick and Arthur Clarke. They kind of got together. They wanted to make a sci-fi film. They wanted to make the first great sci-fi film because it had not really been a genre that had been treated – from a film standpoint, with seriousness. Mm-hmm. So they kind of knew some broad strokes, but there was a lot of the plot they still had to work out. And there's so many things, Andrew. I'm not spoiling anything by saying this, but one of the great takeaways from the film, from this special about the film for me, was how many things they did and then undid. Like, there was all this voiceover. The whole movie had voiceover to try to explain what's going on, and they just – and like a week before they released the film, they just dropped the voiceover.
Oh, wow.
And
good.
Like, there's just constantly things like that where there's like something that, you know, all the music that had been recorded for it, they didn't use it. They just used what they had been using in the studio while they were cutting the film. They were listening to music. And like, there were just all these major decisions. And I thought, oh, the takeaway for me with this is don't get too attached to anything. I'm talking about, I don't think I'm Stanley Kubrick, but when I'm just doing something with Livewire, or even you and I are talking about the 3,000th episodes coming up and how we want to do some cool stuff. And let's just say there's something creatively that I'm very attached to in my mind, like it's got to be this way. I got to remember that sometimes it can be a different way, and that can also be cool because I get very, very attached to a certain way of doing things. And it's nuts to hear about all the darlings that were killed, you know, all the creative ideas that were changed radically, and not just by Kubrick. I mean, they would be everybody associated with the film. Obviously, he was really in charge of it. But anyway, when you're talking about the putting the robot voice on your alarm clock or activating that feature, I was reminded of how they were talking about how in a lot of movies, if you're trying to create dramatic tension or if you're trying to freak people out, you have a bad person saying bad things very badly. I think it's even maybe Tom Hanks who says, because Tom Hanks is obsessed with that movie, he's seen it like 200 times, and he does actually really interesting commentary on the film in this special. And he goes, it's so much more interesting to have this computer voice talking and being restrained than, he said, the bad guy in Bond saying, like, I'm going to kill you now, James Bond. He was just talking about how, like, something about the detached, computerized nature of it was mm-hmm. really unsettling. And in listening to the clips during the special, I was like, yeah, they totally got that. So anyway, my point is that's why that will wake you up, because it's unsettling. It's uncanny, as we say, for that computer, that robot to be telling you to get up.
I also think it's a little abrupt, too. I don't think it's not even as soothing as the Hal voice. And I'm excited to tell you, I've set the alarm now. We are exactly 35 seconds away from this thing going off. But yeah, I find it to be not like a pleasant, like, it's time to wake up now. Oh, did you want me to sleep, Dave? It's going to be, you know, she kind of barks it over top of the alarm. If I'm remembering it correctly, we're 15 seconds away from this now. I was trying to talk up to it. I didn't really have anything interesting to say, but here we go. 10 seconds. This is awesome. 5 seconds.
Imagine you're sleeping. Okay, we're just sleeping. You're just dead asleep.
Better be good.
Right now. You're welcome, ASMR fans, that this is happening.
Okay. It's going to get louder and louder.
It's 9:26 a.m.
That's it.
Ugh.
Yeah, right? She only said dismiss. We're done with this. She only says it once, but I don't like that voice, and that's good. I mean that in a good way. I need a voice.
Yeah, because
I don't
you've
like.
Got options with that now. It's not like it wouldn't be that. It would not be that hard to record someone in with a natural human voice saying every possible time.
Right.
You start
yeah.
at
right. Yeah.
12:01, and you do 12:02, 12:03, because that's one of those things where it's like. That's a robot-generated voice where they can just – the robot – somebody has programmed in every phonetic sound, and it's just assembling them in order. And that work – that you have to do that for certain things. But in this case, you could just have someone with a much more naturalistic voice record all of the things. What about an alarm clock, Andrew, that literally played this – exactly this recording of this? Oh, this is actually the scene where he
finally
just crushes the alarm clock. But but what if it was the song and then the morning DJs in where is it? Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, saying it's cold out there, and it's like Sonny and Cher, whatever it is, whatever the little spiel is that those morning DJs say over and over again in Groundhog Day. What about an alarm that woke you up with that exact montage every morning?
First of all, it would probably work once. Secondly, I bet you $1 million somebody is doing that in America as we speak. I even bet you $5 there's somebody in our audience who has done that at some point in their life. But, you know, I'd knock that down, that wager down to $5. I mean, that was a pretty big jump in wagers.
Yeah,
Can I do something for you here that I have never done on the show before? Nerver.
Wow. Is that
Nerver.
Real? Episode of firsts.
It really is.
It was the first time you've ever had a thought that you've been thinking for a long time that you didn't bring up.
Yep.
And now you're about to do something else you've never done before. This is special.
Shut up your voicemail. I have a voicemail here that I haven't listened to yet. I always screen these things. I get rid of the little space at the beginning. I make sure the audio levels are good. I'll tighten them up sometimes if I feel like they need to be tightened. Yeah, I'm manipulating your voices. But anyway, I forgot to get the emails this morning, and so I'm looking, though, and Google Translate will give you
Fly without a net here?
Yeah, sometimes Google Translate will
Annette is
like,
the woman who usually checks the voicemails for us, but
Annette is
she's
my co-pilot.
Actually on maternity leave.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to just play this right from the voicemail account based on the transcription, the very, very rough transcription from Google. It looks like this might be a kangaroo story from somebody named Ian.
Boy.
Ian, if this story isn't good and I get a slightly lukewarm compliment from my boss about this, I'm coming to get you. This is on you.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. This is Ian in Tacoma. And while the Roo talk is still at the front of my mind here, I'm going to share my Roo encounter story. So when I was in-
Yeah.
Is Ian being held hostage?
It does
is he
sound
making
like
the call.
I'm
is
wondering
he making the call from like the back corner of a bank vault where he's currently being held by robbers.
Here is my guess on this. Let's see. What time did this come in? Does it say this came in at almost 11:30 on Monday night? So, and I think I've heard other listeners do this before too. I think that he was listening to the show probably by himself. There are probably other people in the house who are already in bed, and he doesn't want to wake them up, but he wants to share this story with us. That's what my guess
By the way, if any of you are ever in a hostage situation, don't use your one call to call our voicemail line because it can sometimes be years between listenings, and it will probably not be the best way to get help.
This is
call 000 if you're in Australia or 911 if you're in the U.S.
That's right. Yeah. All right. I have just done something on the fly while you were talking there. I imported this into my audio software and tried to I didn't EQ it, which it actually needs, but hopefully I've leveled out the levels a little bit here. Let's see if this is better.
Hey, guys. This is Ian in Tacoma. And while the Roo talk is still at the front of my mind here, I'm going to share my Roo encounter story.
I don't want to wake up the kidnappers.
So when I was in Australia about 10 years ago, we were doing a walk on a cliffside. So to our right was water, to our left was a meadow with some cows in it. We're walking down the path, and then about 15, 20 yards out, we see this cute little kangaroo. And my now wife and I go up to it. We start walking up to it, and we're just thinking about how cute it is and how adorable it is. And, you know, just how incredible this experience is. And then the kangaroo stands up. The kangaroo was well over 6 feet tall and very, very jacked. It was like the Rock of kangaroos.
Was it the jacked kangaroo? Do you remember about the famous, his name was Roger, and he actually just passed away, sadly. But there was a famously jacked kangaroo. I'm going to send you a picture of him right now, like so buff.
This rings a bell. I feel like maybe it must have come up at some point in all of our Australia talk. Is that sounds like something you've told me before. But let's.
This is a real thing. That's
okay.
All I'm trying to say.
Okay, yeah. So you send me that. Maybe that's a show pick, and then let's pick this up here.
Maybe.
The show pick is definitely Joe Dolce. Shut up.
Oh, you're right. What am I thinking?
Jacked Joe Dolce.
I have to get my Photoshop on this afternoon and maybe even start.
I smell next year's bobbleheads.
That's what I was going to say. All right, let me try picking this up here.
The kangaroo was well over 6 feet tall and very, very jacked. It was like the Rock of kangaroos. And that's when I learned they are terrifying. Majestic as they may be, Luke, you're right not to go over that hill because there may be a pack of kangaroos waiting to beat you up. Anyways, appreciate the show, guys. I'm glad you had a great time. Bye.
See, a lot of people say love the show. He said appreciate the show, and that's kind of sending me down a...
Ooh, he's rezzing you.
Spiral raise. Stop rezzing me.
Hey, I think the show really has some strong points.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just maybe we could get to some things maybe faster. Maybe.
Just, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, hey guys, I caught the show and I will tell you this, a lot of people appreciate the show.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. So that was a grand.
Just saying, a lot of people.
That was my grand experiment in playing a voicemail that was on screen. Now, I could have messed around with the levels a little bit if I had done my homework this morning, but I think that mostly paid off.
I did, in fact, jog over that hill.
Yeah.
But with great hesitation. And thankfully, what's an organization of kangaroos? It's a,
a hoppy?
A hoppy of kangaroos. Uh-huh. Luckily, there was not a hoppy of kangaroos that had been doing push-ups and getting swole, ready to come back after me. But honestly, the thought did cross my mind because I was so out of my element being out there. Like, nothing was really happening. Nothing was actually threatening me other than my mind's ability to kind of spin out. And I'd heard so much about be careful in the outback, and I had seen this video of a guy. I think he was hang gliding or something. He was somehow coming down to rest in Australia, and a kangaroo runs up and like starts fighting him as he's landing.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly the kangaroos were just wigged out, like, why is this thing descending from the sky?
Mm-hmm.
But I did have it somewhere in the back of my mind, like, you just have to be so careful out here because you never know what's going to emerge from the wilderness. And so even though I was like so fascinated with those kangaroos and I really wanted to see, I wanted to come up, my dream was to come up to the crest of the hill, see a bunch of them just peacefully like grazing or whatever it is kangaroos do, and then I could just look at them, maybe take a picture from a distance. That would have been my dream. My nightmare was I come over the hill and three of them are wearing leather jackets sharpening a knife on their hand.
Mm-hmm. And real life was right in between those two. Nothing was there.
Yeah, neither thing happened.
Yeah.
I didn't see them, and also they weren't lying in wait for me. But yeah, I can definitely imagine that were you to be up close and personal with a kangaroo that was in a bad mood, it could be quite terrifying. You said their hands freaked you out.
Yeah, just the whole
claws,
build of them.
Whatever you call their arms.
Yeah, once I mean, the one we saw skip across the road looked cute from a distance. But yeah, when I started looking at photos of these things before our trip, like close-up photos of them, I was like, ooh, not the cute little ruse that I know from cartoons that may or may not be wearing little baby boxing gloves. But actually, yeah, these things kind of look like weird it's almost like their torsos are almost more humanoid with small little, I guess not hooved. Somebody correct me. They don't have hooves on their hands. But either way, no, like there's something.
They have little claws.
Little claws. By the way, you want to know a fun fact? I tried to look up what a group of kangaroos was. I didn't trust the first answers I saw because I thought that the websites were janky. But this is coming from PBS. This is coming from Nature. They're called mobs.
It's a mob.
It's a mob of ruse.
A mob of ruse.
What if you came over that hill and there was a mob of ruse?
This is interesting. Because it clearly speaks to the idea of how what we perceive to be the intelligence of animals. Because guess what it is? It's a parliament of owls.
Mm-hmm.
So we think we're being wise all with these
yeah.
Zizols. Like, oh, hey, guess what got together? A parliament of owls. But guess what else I saw? A mob of kangaroos that were being attacked by a murder of crows.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kind of our moralizing on the like – On the way we describe an assortment of a certain kind of animal. We think that kangaroos are unruly and it's a mob of them.
Yeah. I mean, the murder of crows has got to be the kind of darkest, right? Darkest.
And also just grammatically. Also just grammatically weird, right? Because that would be, right, would that be a, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to do this. Would that be is that a verb?
What kind of word is murder? Right? Well, you can murder somebody and there can be a murder, so it's a noun and a verb.
So a person, place, or thing extends to a murder is a thing, so it can be a noun?
Well, if you're trying to solve a murder, that the murder would be a noun.
A murder is a thing that happened?
Right.
Okay. I just think that to me it's like I don't think of murder as a noun.
Right.
I think of it as a verb. I think of it as a thing somebody does to someone.
Yeah.
So the idea that a collection of crows could be a verb is weird to me. Whereas a parliament kind of feels like an assembly of things. A mob definitely. I mean, to be honest with you, mob works.
Yeah, no, that's really
mob
good.
Mob actually is
a, I was just going to say, this is can I trust this list? And can I trust that we haven't, I mean, we must have done this on TBTL before. But I have a list of apparently what you call groups of animals here. From grammar.yourdictionary.com, so I don't know, buyer beware. But apparently the first one listed here is apes. It's a shrewdness of apes.
No.
Shrewdness of apes. Let me see if I can get some verification.
A Dwight shrewdness of apes?
But like one is shrewd. This really goes into what you're saying. Like we're taking the things that we think these animals are. Like an ape might be shrewd.
Dude.
Yeah.
Treehugger.com, which for some reason I believe more than the one you read from, totally confirms this.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Okay.
Are we going to
do
ready?
This? You've got a list in front of you. Are we going to go dueling list?
Sure, yeah. What do you got?
A congregation of alligators. Hallelujah.
I love that. How about an obstinacy of buffalo?
How about a wake of buzzards.
A wake. Oh, so again, kind of like a funeral death
funereal
kind of vibe. Yeah. Let's see here. A gang of elks. Not unlike
this
a mob.
I'm trying to figure out where this.
No way. A tower of giraffes. No way.
Somebody said, hey, check this out. Somebody wrote on Twitter the other day, and I have to agree with them. What's more improbable, a horse with a horn on its head, or I believe they said like it was like a leopard deer with a 40-foot neck.
And it actually was a leopard deer with a 40-foot neck?
Well, no, but that's what a giraffe actually looks like if you think about it.
I'm being
like,
totally dumb.
I mean,
a horse
having a horn is not that crazy if you think about it. But giraffes are real. If you just look at a giraffe and you think about what it's actually like, that is a way more magical creature than a unicorn.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, just an animal with a horn on his head isn't that big of a deal. Now, you throw some wings on that guy. Now, we're talking a flying horse with a unicorn. Okay. That strains credulity.
That's a Pegasus.
What about a parade of elephants or a business of ferrets?
A lot of these, many of the animal groups names, animal group names used in English can be traced back to texts from 1480 collected in the Book of St. Albans. Hmm. The book contains several essays which discussed a few popular sports at the time. There's a mysterious woman. The book mentions a mysterious woman named Julia Berners as having written her Book of Hunting, the content of which included a long list of clever group names she is thought to have coined. Very little is known about Berners. Scholars believe she came from an affluent family and was taught to enjoy hunting at a young age. So we think, according to the Oxford Dictionary, Berners' fanciful, funny, and spectacularly imaginative names were probably never intended to be taken very seriously, but they soon ended up being repeated by other writers in antiquity until they stuck. So some of these group names were included a flutter of butterflies, a swarm of bees she came up with, a parliament of owls, a murder of crows. So it sounds like, if this is to be believed, that these were written kind of as a joke, but now we've used them so much, at least the famous ones. So let's see. What was the bee one again? A swarm of bees. Yeah. So a swarm of bees is from this same thing. A swarm of bees sounds totally normal to me.
Yeah, right.
What doesn't sound normal to me is a bloat of hippos.
Right, which makes, again, if somebody's just kind of like off the cuff in these things, a bloat of hippos makes sense because they're kind of bloated beasts. A pandemonium of parrots, like, that's right on the nose right there.
A scurry of squirrels. Or, alternately, a dray of squirrels, although people have largely forgotten about that
one.
I
know. That's the problem. A prickle of porcupines?
A little on the nose, let's be honest.
No, I agree.
Easy Wondery. I've listened to so many podcasts from this network called Wondery, because they basically make the Dateline NBCs of podcasts.
Yeah.
But, man, and actually, a good friend of ours now is hosting a show on Wondery, and it's a really good show. And he doesn't have this going on. It's our friend Rico Galliano. His show doesn't have this same problem. But so many of the shows I listen to, it's like, okay, so there's one called Over My Dead Body, which is about basically couples where there is a homicide in the couple. Somebody dies in the relationship and then they investigate what happened. But the song is like literally like these two people singing and the woman singing like, I never killed that man. And then I'm listening to this other one called The Shrink Next Door, which is about Joe Nocera, who was a New York Times columnist for many years, was writing about his next-door neighbor who was a psychiatrist – I believe a psychiatrist. He was a shrink. And he was very shady, and he had basically like kind of mind-controlled one of his clients. And the song they play is I Put a Spell on You. That's the theme song every time. And it's like, you guys don't need for the theme song to these shows to literally discuss the matter. Like, you could do something that's 5% more clever.
Yeah, and that's that is a specific bugaboo for you, like song, because you like a really clever matchup with music.
Well, I mean, it doesn't even have to be, but it's like, don't you think I Put a Spell on You when it's the story of a guy who basically kind of brainwashed another guy? Don't you think that that's a little bit on the nose?
Yes, I do think it's that. I think I used that for our Halloween show. Now I'm wondering if you want me to go back and cut that out. No,
but also that would be fine in a Halloween show, because unless it was like we're going to do a specific segment of the Halloween show about someone casting spells. And then if we used I Put a Spell on You, I'd be like, a little on the nose.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I didn't know that Rico was doing a podcast over at Wondery, so I looked it up. Are you talking about Safe for Work, an advice show that reminds you while your office may be crazy, you don't have to be?
It's called, yes, but also I think it's called 1+1.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's another one he's involved with. Okay.
Yeah. It's, he's got, I think it's Great Collaborations. Every Great Collaboration is a love story, intense, passionate, and it basically talks about sort of creative pairings, talking about Jay-Z and Beyonce, talking about Sergey Brin and Larry Page, those are the Google dudes, Lennon and Trotsky, Shaq and Kobe. Basically goes into the sort of creative these creative pairings. The thing is, I like the stuff that Wondery is making. So for me, I think that's also why I get annoyed, overly annoyed, obviously, when there's something that I like. This is why people get so mad at us, I think. They like our show, but and then when we do something they don't like, they're like, it's extra bad. It's one thing if a show you're not interested in or a network you're not into the content, if they do something dumb, you're like, yeah, well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But if you're into – like I listen to all these Wondery shows with pretty great regularity. That's why I feel like they're betraying me with their musical choices.
Yeah.
Because I do like it.
You want it to be double good, not double bad.
That's all.
Right.
Oh, speaking of betraying the listeners, when are we going to – get that going.
Oh, whenever you're ready, man. So you low-keyed announced it on the show. I mean, we've been kind of teasing this for a while.
Was that okay? Sorry.
No, I'm
just
glad
to.
Like,
go rogue on that.
No, but just to make it more explicit, like, how does my own voice drop? Or how is a drop of my own voice?
How are you turning yourself on right now? Why don't you just try kissing a potato like everybody else does?
I'm pretty jacked. Like a kangaroo. Yeah, we've been saying we're going to do maybe another TV show, kind of a serialized little side podcast where we look at every episode of a show. And you just kind of mentioned, yeah.
We're going to call it serialized. Shouldn't be confusing for anyone.
No, it'll be good. It'll get us some downloads, frankly.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're thinking about, we're going to do Patriot. I think most people had kind of figured that out because you got into that show, Patriot. And we're talking about the one that... You know, it suffers from a bad name that I don't think represents what's in it. It's a very kind of arty, at times surreal kind of take on a spy craft, and it's really good. And it's only on Amazon Prime, and didn't seem to get a lot of attention. And literally, I've said to people, "You got to watch the show Patriot." And they're like, literally, somebody said to me, "That does not sound like my kind of show." And I'm like, "No, it's not 24. Trust me, this is a good show." So now that this is out there, this is what we're doing. This is our plan. I'm excited. We're like locked in because if there's one thing you know about TBTL, we do not say we're going to do anything on the show and not deliver on it. Top stories.
We call it a disappointment of TBTL. When you get multiple episodes together.
Okay, can that be the show title, or is that too negative?
Absolutely. No. I think as long as we have a picture of Joe Dolce there, we'll still get the clicks.
All right, good. Good show.
Okay, nice. Let's see. I guess that's probably going to be it for today.
Yeah.
You want to play the album music? You want me to from
I'll
here?
Play it from here. It gives me a little bit more control. And if there's one thing I love, it's control.
Listen, all I would say to you, my friend, is if you get tired this afternoon, go to sleep. You're not going to ruin your life. A good nap, man, is one of the – honestly, there are days – put drinking aside, there are many days in my life where I only get out of bed so I can take a nap. Like I get up because I'm like, now if I'm awake, it means I can go back to sleep later. Napping is one of the great joys of life, and if you can do it, if your schedule permits it, believe me, we have tons of bleary-eyed listeners with young children or who are working – two jobs who are like, I have my kingdom for a nap. If you get a chance,
for
man.
Many. Yeah, it's not just me. I'm
I mean,
letting
the
people
irony
down
is,
if I don't nap.
I would say don't sleep on your sleeping.
No.
Is really what this comes down to.
And there's your book title.
So, yes. Now to write the book.
Yeah. It's got a
all
new
right,
focus.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Oh, hey, if you're going to be in Portland area tomorrow night, I'm doing Livewire down there. Paul F. Tompkins will be there, which is going to be exciting and fun. Patterson Hood from Drive-By Truckers will be the music. And I think it's maybe there's like 5 tickets left. So if you can get some, and maybe we'll see you there. All right. Thanks. See you tomorrow. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.